Scene 15. Roseanne Bronstein, 5:15 p.m. I didn't have much of a desire to leave the room, not at once. I had till 6 before I would be forced to go, and what bothered me was that I had nowhere to go, nothing to do. Wherever it was I went, whatever it was I did, it would have to be aimed at solving this damned puzzle. In 2 or 3 days, probably, Giles would be buried, and I would have to attend some sort of memorial service, I knew. And I must, for my own peace of mind, know something by then. Or was I just setting myself deadlines, as I was accustomed to do in connection with this chapter or that in my novels, in order to force myself to get them done? Well, why was he murdered? So far, I had a trivial complication to his life and a serious one. The trivial one was the dry pen owing to my failure to deliver the package. I didn't see how the pens could have anything to do with it. Or was I just trying to rid myself of responsibility? There was also the serious complication involved in the sexual frustration of 2 women, Eunice and Roseanne. Who would ever have thought of Giles Devore as an homme fatal driving 2 women to distraction? Of the 2, I was sure Eunice hadn't killed him. She guessed too quickly that I was hinting at murder. Surely, if she had been a murderer, she would have been very careful not to see my hint at all. She would stubbornly have veered away from the word and concept. Or am I just being a romantic? What about Roseanne? Where could I find her? I might try wandering about the hotel, looking for her, but the fact was that I could wander forever and never bump into her by accident, even if she were in the hotel, which was as large as a small town. And she might not be in the hotel in the first place. Nor could I think of anyone whom I might ask and who might know where she was. I thought a while, staring out the window at an unappetizing section of walls and windows as seen blurrily through an off-white curtain. Roseanne must have found out about Giles' death. Henrietta would have had it announced, and it might even have made the radio and television news by now. And if she had heard, and she had been in the process of desperately trying to win him back to that horrible game he played with obliging women, surely her reaction would be one of despair. Would she go to a bar and get drunk? Would she jump off the roof, shrieking imprecations at fate? Would she go home and sob herself to sleep? I couldn't check every bar in town, and if she had jumped off the roof, I had a feeling I'd hear about it soon enough. As for home, that was easy enough to check. It required only a phone call, and there was a phone in the room. Of course, it didn't belong to me, and the tab would be placed firmly on the wallet of the guy who was arriving to take the room this evening. I refused to worry about it, though, and told myself I would straighten out the matter with Sarah. The phone was of the type where dialing 9 would give me an outside line automatically. That was good, for it meant I didn't have to go through the operator, who might, after all, object to completing a call from an unoccupied room. Or would she know it was unoccupied? I dialed 9, and then the number of the bookstore, which the telephone directory had been kind enough to give me. The bookstore wouldn't be open on Memorial Day, I suppose, but she lived in several rooms above it. She probably had an extension upstairs. I let it ring 15 times on the theory that she might not have an extension upstairs and might have to hurry downstairs to pick up the phone. I bet myself 15 to 4 no one would answer. I lost my bet by a nose when the receiver was lifted on the 15th ring. The voice was a low croak, absolutely unrecognizable, and I suspected a wrong number. "Roseanne," I said, tentatively. "What the hell do you want?" came the voice, somewhat stronger. I recognized it now. "It's Darius Just." "I know it is. What the hell do you want?" She didn't call me little fella. She was really in a bad way. "I'm sorry, Roseanne, but have you heard about Giles?" "Yes, I heard about him. You'd think that rotten bastard could keep on his feet in the bathtub." That made 2 women who called him names for daring to be dead. I said, "Roseanne, did you see Giles since you and I talked yesterday?" "No, I didn't. And what business is that of yours anyway? Did you see him?" I could have told her I had, but to what end? No point in repeating what he had said. Not now. I said, "Roseanne, I'm puzzled about something." "What are you talking about?" "Look, when I came into his room..." "You found him, yes, I know. Maybe you pushed him." She was being completely unreasonable. I said, "Listen, Roseanne, when I came into his room, he was already dead. He was in the bathtub as though he had been taking a shower, and his clothes were thrown all over the room. It was as though he had taken them off and just tossed them every which way as he was getting ready for his shower." There was silence at the other end for so long that I was about to jiggle the contacts. Then she said, in a more normal voice than any I had heard her use, "But that's impossible. He always folded..." She stopped, but I had two things. I was certain now that Roseanne had played the game with Giles, and the second was that she clearly agreed that the clothes could not have been strewn by Giles. She said, "You mean someone else tossed those clothes around? Some woman? No, he wouldn't let that happen." Then she, too, made the leap which it seemed to me declared her innocent. "You mean someone killed him and then spread the clothes around to make it look as if he had an accident while he was taking a shower? Do you think that's possible?" "I don't know. I..." "Yes, of course it was possible," she exploded suddenly. "It was Eunice." "Eunice? Of course. If she couldn't have him, then no one could." "That can't be, Roseanne," I said, deliberately lying to see if she had reason to say it or was the simple prey of spite. "Eunice has a rigid and solid alibi." Roseanne made a croaking sound that might have been intended for laughter. She said, "Do you suppose she would do it herself? She hired somebody. You don't have to invest much these days to get someone killed." "Do you have evidence for that, Roseanne?" "I don't need evidence." "You do legally, if you're going to say things like that. Besides, it may occur to someone that your motive is the same as Eunice's and is strong." "Mine? If you can't have him, then no one can." And she screamed, "Oh, don't be a goddamn jackass!" and crashed the phone into its cradle. Much more slowly and gently, I hung up. Well, what had I accomplished? Both got my hint at murder without trouble, which made me tend to eliminate them from suspicion. To be sure, Eunice had not been able to accept the possibility, even for the sake of accusing Roseanne, which he had clearly wanted to be able to do. Roseanne, on the other hand, could and did accuse Eunice at once. That, however, might merely reflect the fact that Eunice was a lawyer and Roseanne was not. And meanwhile, Roseanne had brought up the point of a hired killer. Why not? It didn't sound likely, but why not? That would mean that alibis meant nothing, and perhaps the trace of heroin I had found was the sort of thing that a hired killer might have left behind. Why, I couldn't say why. It was no use. In the last 5 hours I had thought harder and longer and steadier and more monotonically than I had ever done for an equal period at any time in my life. Not even when I was plotting my novels had I thought harder and longer, and yet it had all brought me exactly nothing. I was no wiser now than at the start, less wise, for others had suggested complications I would not have thought of myself. But it was almost 6, and a customer would be arriving at any moment. I placed the key on the bureau, walked out the door of 1524, and locked it behind me. I was still thinking.